Well, May 13th, 2024, we had the disclosure, and I heard the truth of everything for the first time in 30 years of our relationship. And in that moment, I was gutted. And simultaneously in that moment, I understand now that that was the catalyst for us to really move into a beautiful new marriage that was better than I could ever imagine.
Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another episode of the PSR Podcast, which is a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries. I want to let you know that we're going to be sharing a story today, and so that some parts of today's episode, you know, might contain some elements that are sensitive and might even be triggering for some listeners, so I encourage you to listen with care. In today's episode, I'm excited to sit down with Clinton and Nikki Mitchell, who bravely share their 31-year marriage journey through addiction, infidelity, and ultimately healing. We talk about the pain of secrecy, the power of full disclosure, and how faith, therapy, and community help them rebuild trust and spiritual intimacy. Now, their story is raw and honest, showing that even in the darkest moments, hope and restoration are possible. I'm so inspired by their courage, and I'm grateful for their wisdom. And I hope that their journey encourages and emboldens anyone facing similar struggles. You can learn more about Clinton and Nikki and get their book at dwn4.org. That stands for Do With Not For.org. For additional resources, visit bebroken.org or check out links in today's show notes. And of course, friends, I'm going to ask you to rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now, let's dive into this powerful story with Clinton and Nikki. Well, all right. We have Clinton and Nikki Mitchell with us. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks. Hey. It's good to be here with you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things to do in this ministry is to be able to highlight stories. I'm a firm believer that the best way that we connect with each other, even the best way that we connect ultimately with God, is through story. And so I wanted to have you guys on because I had met you guys at the Sexual Integrity Leadership Summit in Portland back in, what was that, May of 2025. And you guys were there and had your book with you, Glory from the Ashes. And you were gracious enough to give me a copy of this book. And I took a little sabbatical over the summer, and over the sabbatical, I read your book, and I was like, these are the kind of stories that I want to shout from the mountaintops, and I want to highlight, because it just really, it's a testament to what God is able to do and also what He's willing to do in a very broken couple. And so I just wanted to bring you on to share your story. And so let's just cut you guys loose. And why don't you tell us the story of Clinton and Nikki Mitchell?
Okay. All right. Well, we have currently been married a little over 31 years. We have two kids who are adults, our daughter and a son, and we've just actually added a daughter-in-law to our family. And about 6 weeks before our 30th wedding anniversary, our marriage blew up and was completely decimated. And so in order to kind of give a picture of how we got to that point, we actually need to go back in time a little bit.
Yeah, we actually need to go back to like early teens for me, where I have a schoolmate introduce me to pornography, and I latch onto it as this coping mechanism for everything stressful and all the anxieties and all the depression that I have going on. It formed this real addiction for me, and it just really started messing me up. And, I was living with that on a regular basis.
Yeah. So at about 16, we started dating, and several years later we got engaged. And sometime before our wedding, I remember Clinton approached me and said, "Hey, I just need you to know that I had some struggles with pornography and masturbation in my life," and made it seem like it was in the past. So that didn't feel quite as daunting to me. Right. We also had the part of our mixed story that we were steeped in the purity culture. And so we both sort of had this unspoken assumption that marriage will fix that.
Yeah.
We'll get married. And why would he need to look at porn
right
at that point? You know, that's just what we assumed, that it was kind of this magic pill.
Right.
It would fix everything.
Right.
And no more problems in that area, because now marriage is the key.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, if you've been married for more than a week, you understand that that's not true. So we have this mountain, right, that we call it, that we end up going around, where we're both very non-confrontational people. And so Nikki would find some sort of evidence of pornography or masturbation in my life, and she would sheepishly bring it to me, and I would say something to the effect of, oh, I'm sorry, I'll do better. And proverbially, I would just hold up the rug and she would sweep it under, right? And like, and we just kind of went around that mountain and around that mountain and around that mountain over and over, just for a lot of years.
Yeah. So I think it was probably 10, 12 years into marriage, something mm-hmm. like that, where I just was tired of going around that mountain. And I remember a particular conversation that we had where I just brought up the conversation with Clinton about pornography. How are things going? How, you know, like, where are we at? And let's just say it didn't go well. Mm. There was a lot of defensiveness. There was a lot of just blame shifting. And so after that conversation, I just thought in my heart, in my mind, I'm not looking anymore. I'm not right. asking anymore. I'm not going to police this thing. And I kind of closed the door on that particular topic in our marriage and in our relationship and said, that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm sure you can imagine how that went.
Yeah. Yeah.
Avoidance is not helpful in any way.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how that can be so deceptive. Like, it's almost like, you know, the little kid who covers his own eyes and says, yeah, I'm hiding and nobody can
here.
See me.
Right. I'm not here. Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So in some ways it gives me more liberty to continue in my sin. And, if you've been in any kind of addictive pattern at all in your life, you know that it doesn't just go away overnight. Short of God performing an absolute miracle, it's just there. It's, you don't wake up the next morning, you're like, I don't feel the need to overeat anymore. Like, that's just not necessarily how that happens. And so, as I was addicted in that, I formed a very unhealthy relationship with a coworker. And this woman, it started as a very emotional affair, and I became very addicted to the affirmation that she would give me. And then shortly thereafter, it turned into a sexual affair. And so I just had this, this compartmentalization where work and affair and all that were in one box, and, wife, kids, family, home was in another box, and never the two shall meet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this. So just to give us also kind of a thread of what did faith look like through this, you know, just what you said just there, Clinton, gives me an indication that maybe there was some, maybe what we might call image building or some facades that were being put up on the yes. faith front. So what was going on in your marriage around like church yeah. and faith and all of that?
Yeah, so there's a plethora of masks that I would wear, pending on the circumstance that I found myself in, and so, well, for both of us really, but yeah. but specifically for me, there's just this going to look the part. Forget about actually being, but I'm going to look it for yeah. sure. Yeah,
yeah, and I think we had the dynamic of Clinton's not willing to really get help or pursue accountability in this area or anything of the sort. And I was conflict avoidant such that I wasn't necessarily going to ask anybody for help on my part either.
Right.
And so I, unfortunately, I didn't even know the whole story at the time, but I kept his secret because of how it would make us look.
Yeah.
So when this affair was going on, Clinton, Nikki, what did you know at all? Or what were you experiencing? Were there any like signals of disconnection or anything like that? What was it like for you during that season of the affair?
Yeah, exactly. During that time, I knew his coworker. I knew, you know, I would go to work, see him at lunchtime and so forth. So I was aware of friends that he had at work. And there were multiple times, even early on in that time period, where I just felt what we call prickly. You know, like I just spidey sense, like what's going on? Something's not right. I don't like what this feels like. Mm-hmm. And so I would actually tell that to Clinton. I would bring it up to him. And in the beginning, it was things like, well, she's just a friend from work. There's, you don't have to be even concerned about that. Just kind of patting that away. And that became our new mountain, you know, where I'm not looking for porn anymore, but now we have a mountain of ways that we interact with each other surrounding this person at work that I'm not feeling comfortable with. Right. And so we'd go around and I would bring something up again. And over time, months of this happening, then it became, he's defensive and it's, you're my wife. You have nothing to be concerned about. And not that there were these words were said, but the attitude of stop asking me about it.
Yeah.
And so,
it's kind of like, can we make this like the other mountain? Like
eventually
just ignore it.
Why isn't this under the rug where it belongs?
Yeah.
And so there came a point about 9 months in where I was just feeling awful. And I took it to the Lord and I said, what do I do? I feel crazy. I feel like everything in me is saying there's a problem, but my husband is saying there's no problem. I don't know what to believe. Myself, him, I feel crazy in this cycle. And so as I got quiet, I just felt like I heard the Lord say, go look at the phone records. So I pulled up the computer, the phone records, and my heart just sank. Because in my view then, it was, here is evidence laid out before me of an emotional affair. That's what I assumed was happening. Our relationship, our friendship was struggling at the time. And so I just, in my mind, assumed he's having an emotional relationship with this other woman. And so I printed out the phone records. And that night when the kids went to bed, I presented it to him just with tears of, this isn't okay. Yeah. And he agreed. He didn't offer anything else at that moment, but he said that he would end it the next day. And so at that point he had ended it. And and so we ended up working with our pastor and his wife weekly for quite a season to just really repair our friendship, repair our connection, because that's what I assumed was missing. We weren't looking at all the other dysfunctions and all the other things that were wrong with our relationship at that point. I was like, if we just be friends again, if we just go on dates and we repair our emotional connection, everything will be fine.
Yeah.
So basically what you were doing is, Clinton, you were just accepting what her assumption was, and there was no full disclosure actually done at that point. So
no.
So what happened after not having a full disclosure?
Right. Yeah. I had determined that I had dodged a bullet, basically, that she thinks this is an emotional affair. Yes, this is going to be hard to get away from and so forth. But I'm not willing to be open to her that it was a sexual affair. That's going to go with me to the grave. Like I'm closed off. I'm going to seal that up and it will never come out. In fact, I remember saying to the Lord, you will have to force me to say anything about that. I didn't think she was strong enough. There was all kinds of excuses that I thought. So that's where that went for me. I just decided no more.
Close it off.
And you know what I call that? I've said this to many men. I call that the fallacy of fresh start thinking. Like, good. Something came out into light and now I can have a fresh start, which is sometimes what the purity culture was saying about marriage. Marriage is your fresh start.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
And you don't deal with anything that's in the dark. You don't deal with anything you've kept hidden. and it just becomes a disaster, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So a lot of years pass where I don't know anything about this. And in 2022, the Lord invited me into a journey of really discovering more of who I was. He just revealed some lies that I had believed my whole life, healed wounds from my past that were influencing how I lived out my life in our marriage. And I changed a lot in that season. And then the next year in 2023, we have our own business and things just got crazy with stress that particular year. And so I started to notice just some uncomfortable old patterns between us of disconnection during that season. Mm-hmm. And in September 2023, I accidentally found pornography on Clinton's iPad because, remember, I wasn't looking. That door was closed.
Right.
And so it just shocked me and sent me into kind of a tailspin of like, I thought this wasn't part of the picture anymore, mm-hmm. partly because I was ignoring it. But now I'm a different person. I'm not the same woman that I was earlier in our marriage. And I have a voice now. And so there's no sweeping anything under the rug because there's no rug anymore. Yeah. We're going to deal with this. We're going to talk about it. We're going to engage it and get to the other side of it. So I actually started attending a Betrayal and Beyond group with the Pure Desire Ministries. And I asked Clinton to get involved with a men's group at that point.
I was holding out big time for like some kind of anonymous online group that I could hide. Yeah. through the providence of the Lord, that did not happen. And I'm grateful for that now. But through some really heavy-handed encouragement from my wife, I ended up at a Pure Desire group in person.
I said,
locally.
Here's the address. They're expecting you tonight.
Yeah.
Nice. There you go. That's good.
So my group experience there was kind of twofold. One was you walk into a group and you realize, wow, I'm not in this alone. There's other people that are struggling besides me. And there's some real relief in that. And then on the other side of that, I had this real issue with pride where I kind of just sat back and judged people like, well, at least I'm not so-and-so and I'm doing that, or at least I'm not this person and doing this and so
at
forth.
At least you're not Jonathan Darty, right? I mean,
right?
Good
yeah.
grief, that guy's really bad.
Yeah, that'd be horrible. So
so
it became this just sit back and stay disengaged for the most part. However, I was finding at least a little relief being around people that would be willing to talk about it.
Having the conversation.
Yeah.
Because that hadn't happened before this point.
Right, right.
And so January of 24, the two of us started some therapy together. Mm-hmm. We were seeing a CSAT, certified sex addiction therapist named Kyle. I was seeing him, Clinton was seeing him, and then we had sessions together as well. So it was a lot of therapy going on.
It was.
Early 24. And the Lord was just so kind because he really started the work that he had been doing in me the couple years prior. He really started doing in Clinton. He was excavating things in his heart and in his mind and revealing lies that he had believed all his life and kind of dismantling the masks that he had been wearing. The facade was starting to come apart.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of softening in me, and I started kind of inching my way back to a relationship with Jesus, and I was able to grasp hold of something that I was never able to grasp hold of prior, which was community. I had now this band of brothers that was willing to hear all the ugly parts of me and not leave the room and be tender to my weakness and to just love me in the middle of that. And so that kind of gave me an opportunity to say, hey, now remember, I'm not completely known. I have secrets that I'm holding in this box that just are hidden, but 90% of me is known, and it's making me more comfortable with the idea of continuing to be known.
Yeah. So
when did the full reveal come out? Like when right. did full disclosure happen? Because obviously you're sitting here today because things that were secret that you said you were going to take to your grave, Clinton, they're out now.
Yeah.
That spring, I was in a session with Kyle by myself, and I said, I don't know how to explain it. I have no proof. There's no foundation for why I even should say this, but I feel like there's something that Clinton is still hiding from me. Yeah. I feel like there's still something that I don't know. And so Kyle suggested that we do a full therapeutic disclosure and go through the process of Clinton laying out his entire history with sexual struggles throughout our relationship. And so we had made plans to do that. And Kyle asked me separately again, he said, do you want to ask Clinton to take a polygraph as part of the disclosure? And I said, I don't think so. I mean, he'll tell me the truth.
Yeah, because I've been so good at telling her the truth so far.
Right, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I said, well, I'll let you know. I have to think about it. And it just felt daunting. And so again, I just took it before the Lord and I said, what do you think about this polygraph thing? And no hesitation, I believe that the Lord immediately said, I want you to ask for the polygraph. Mm-hmm. Trust my process because the truth is going to set you both free.
Yeah.
And so that is what I held on to in the process.
So I hear about this polygraph, which we refer to as the polybomb. And I mean, my face drains of all blood. My stomach gets tied up in knots. I am, my mind is whizzing at this point for about 30 seconds to try to do some kind of damage control. And how can I get out of this? And in the middle of that, I sense the Lord speak to me, and he has an invitation for me. He says, I have an invitation for you for freedom. And what I thought was going to be freedom from sexual addiction, he really wanted me to have freedom for life. He wanted full and complete freedom. And so I sat there and just was stunned by it for a little bit, and then realized what I could lose. Like, I could lose my wife, and I could lose my children, and I could lose the home and business and family and friends and all the things. I could lose all that. And I just felt like the Lord said to me, yeah, you could, but am I worth it? Am I enough for you? And I just took a moment and realized that he was going to be enough. The truth is, he's enough. So that's where that kind of changed for me.
And, you know, on both sides of this story, for you too, Nikki, isn't that ultimately the question that it boils down to for all of us?
Yes.
Like, is he enough?
Yeah.
Is he enough for what you need to walk through, Nikki? Is he enough for what you need to release, Clinton? Like, it's like, I think that's the baseline question that God is asking all of us.
Absolutely.
Is, are you willing to trust me, and am I enough no matter what happens in your circumstances?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what did happen? And then where did that ultimately lead you guys? Because I'm super excited to talk about something that you put in the book that you call spiritual intimacy, which I think a lot of couples need to hear about that. So, but what happened next in the story to finally get you to a place where you could begin to engage this, this process of spiritual intimacy?
Right. Well, May 13th, 2024, we had the disclosure and I heard the truth of everything for the first time in 30 years of our relationship. And in that moment, I was gutted. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously in that moment, I understand now that that was the catalyst for us to really move into a beautiful new marriage that was better than I could ever imagine.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people, I hate what happened. Mm-hmm. I hate it. I don't condone it. I'm not okay with it. And at the very same time, I have to hold the fact that without this piece of our story, we wouldn't be where we are right now in our marriage.
Yeah.
And that's a hard reality to swallow, to be honest. But I'm to the point and to the place now where I can truly be grateful for what we have walked through.
Yeah.
Because I know that That's what God decided that it would take for us to be where we are now.
Yeah. Yeah. So lots of people refer to Disclosure Day as D-Day, right? But at this point in our walk, we really see it. We refer to it as Freedom Day.
Yeah, we've renamed it in our thinking that it's freedom, walking in freedom.
So the Lord starts building on a foundation for us, and we start recognizing what we didn't have, right? And mm-hmm. and like you said, one of those things that we just didn't have in our relationship was something that we termed as spiritual intimacy. And if I could nutshell spiritual intimacy, I would say it's blending oneness with Christ with oneness with each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's a good way to say it.
Ecclesiastes 4 talks about the three-stranded cord that's not easily broken in reference to relationships. And, you know, we kind of maybe think of that as a braid where I have me, I have this other person, probably my spouse, and I have Jesus, and we're kind of braided together. But we want to suggest that it's so much more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Nikki has a relationship with Jesus. And we'll just use like relationship terms, and there's thousands of them out there, so you can fill in however you want to. But so Nikki has a relationship, which means that she spends time with Jesus. She has communication with Jesus. She has openness and honesty with Jesus. She has vulnerability, all the different things, right?
And that causes just a blending.
Yeah. This weaving together of her as this relationship with Jesus. And then I have a relationship with Jesus, and the same thing's true about me. All those relational terms are true about my relationship with Jesus. And then what we found was, is that lots of people, they hold hands when they pray, but there's no sharing of that relationship. It's kind of like you're a part of, I'm with her, but I'm not involved yeah. with, right? So we would like to suggest that spiritual intimacy really takes place when we have a relationship with Jesus. So we use the same terms as we were before, like we spend time with him, we communicate with him, we have openness with each other and with him, we have honesty with him, we have vulnerability, all those things. And therefore, we end up with this new weaving together of our relationship with Jesus. And so, yes, Nikki has a relationship with Jesus. And yes, I have a relationship with Jesus. And we can safely say that we have a relationship with Jesus.
Yeah. So help. There's a couple things I want to unpack here. One is try to draw the line for us from Freedom Day.
Mm-hmm.
To then really getting towards spiritual intimacy, because a lot of times that's not a straight line. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's healing. There's some things that have to happen. There's even learning, like, what does it look like for me to really go deeper with God and with my spouse? Yeah. So draw a line for that. And then maybe give us some practical pictures of what this actually looks like for you in your relationship. This idea of cultivating spiritual intimacy.
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, we left off on D-Day and we call it Freedom Day. And so there's this starting from the basics. You have these hard conversations, and both sides are really difficult and so forth. And so we like to suggest that there's this new level of humility that has to be accepted. And the humility is not just for one of us, it's for both of us.
I think it's obvious that the struggling partner or the betraying partner needs to humble themselves. you walk in humility.
Sure.
And I've been in circles now enough with other betrayed women to where there can be easily an attitude of like, yeah, buddy, get your act together and then we'll be fine.
Right.
As soon as you deal with your stuff and you do your recovery, then we'll be okay. But I had to choose the same humility in my response as well, because without both of us walking with our eyes fixed on Jesus and putting this relationship, this coupleship in the forefront of we want to yeah. heal from this thing. And so we had very early, I mean, the day after disclosure, we're having these hard conversations. I'm asking a lot of questions. I mean, you can imagine it's challenging. And from moment one, I feel like Clinton was completely open with me and vulnerable and humble. He never got defensive. He is, because in our story, like we said, he never confessed anything before. I always discovered, I always found things. Yeah. And so from moment one of him saying, I remember I was just sharing my pain and I just asked him, well, what are you thinking? Like, I don't even know what you're thinking. And he said, I will share with you what I'm thinking, but first you need to be heard.
Yeah.
And there was just such an immediacy of his leaning into being humble before me and open before me. That was such a new piece of our story.
And it makes a difference when you've taken a lie detector test and you know that yeah. you're finally fully in the light yeah. and you don't have to work an angle anymore, Clinton, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
To that helps with humility when, yeah. and by the way, I like to tell people all the time, especially for the guys in this kind of situation, Clinton, is that, you know, humility and humiliation have the same root word. Right. Sometimes we have to be humiliated in order to finally be humbled, you know?
Yeah. I think there's another part of our story, which is we had this line in the sand and we had this, I'm going to call it a revelation. It's just something that really connected with both of us that once we had Freedom Day, once the disclosure was done and the polygraph is done and all the things, right? We had this understanding that everything before that was how I used to act, how she used to act.
Mm-hmm. And the old us, mm-hmm. old patterns, old dysfunctions, old ways of avoidance of hard things.
I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. Like, it wasn't happy, happy, joy, joy from then on. It was just that we could recognize and say, ooh, I'm acting like my old self. Yeah. I really don't want to act like that. I am so sorry that I'm acting like that right now. Please forgive me. I want to act like my new yeah. self, you know? And so it's, yes, we had some really good Holy Spirit driven conversations, but we also had some terrible grief and heartache where yeah. we acted a fool like we used to, and we had to redeem that, yeah. you know?
And that's why sometimes it can be helpful to have a disclosure like that as kind of a demarcation day between mm-hmm. old and new, yes. where it's like, we're going to get a full disclosure
right.
so that we know everything that we're dealing with here so that we can say that was pre-disclosure, pre-Freedom
yeah.
Day
yeah.
and post-Freedom Day. And that's important. So then as you guys are, walking in this, give us some practical pictures of what does it look like to build spiritual intimacy, especially for a couple who maybe has gone through this kind of betrayal.
Yeah. I think that one of the ways that we kind of really have thought about this is there's lots of different spiritual disciplines that are very good that we can pray, we can worship together, we can journal together in different ways, we can serve. There's lots of things that we can do as spiritual acts of our relationship with Christ, even together. But the thing that made the difference for us was understanding that we do those things with Jesus. We don't do them for him. We don't just, I'm going to pray because it's the thing to do and I need to check it off the list. We're going to actually sit together and we're going to pray and we're going to invite Jesus to be with us in the things that we're praying about.
Yeah.
Maybe it's worship. You know, we would spend time just soaking in music and listening to worship so that our minds were focused on God and focused on the things that would be uplifting and healing and right. restorative.
And so with that, what we ended up doing is So let's just use prayer as the example. We would have times of prayer, and she would pray and I would pray and back and forth or whatever. And then when we got done, we actually asked, you know, well, what was that like for you? What was it like? What was the Lord saying to you? What were you hearing him? What were you imagining in your mind? What were you experiencing? How did that make your body feel? And honestly, that's uncomfortable for most recovery people to do, right? Yeah. It's uncomfortable for most people to do.
Yeah. We're not in touch with our feelings and what's right. going on.
But as we found, when we could really tune into what we were actually experiencing and share it with each other, there was a knowledge for her, especially, that I'm experiencing something in Christ and she can recognize the relationship that I'm having with him.
Yeah, that was very important for me, especially early on. I know it's the trust built, rebuilding trust is like excruciating after mm-hmm. something like this. And I remember a particular session that I had with my therapist, Monica, and I was just struggling. Like, I don't even know who this guy is. Like, how is anything real? All of it was just hard. And she said, "Nikki, do you trust Jesus?" And I said, "Of course I trust Jesus." And she said, "Do you believe that Jesus is in your husband?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I believe he is." She said, "For now, you don't have to trust Clinton. You trust Jesus in him." Yeah. And as I saw his relationship with Christ beginning to flourish again, because let's face it, in the throes of addiction and addictive behaviors, you're not real close to the Lord, yeah. you know, because that's just something that it's not in the wheelhouse.
Right, right.
Okay, and we're back. We had some technical difficulties, folks. Sorry, literally everything in my office just went black for a second. And unfortunately, Nikki, you were in the middle of a phenomenal thought. But what I'd like to do is, as we kind of land the plane here, I want you to just maybe speak a word of hope to the couples that are listening that are maybe in that grief stage, or maybe they're going through a disclosure, or maybe they're kind of in those places where you were, Nikki, where I just feel like there's maybe still something else. What word of hope would you have, both of you, for couples that are just wanting to say, I want to take the next step, but I don't know how to do it?
Yeah. I think that something that we are really keenly aware of is that not every marriage will make it through betrayal. And that's valid. For those that do want to pursue this healing and pursue this work, I would just say that there absolutely is hope. I think that if both people are willing to do the work, to recover, to uncover the things that have led to this, so that the why in both people, that God is faithful.
Yeah,
he has a plan and he is absolutely willing to meet you exactly where you are. You might be in the throes of working through this. You might not. I mean, there might be guys who haven't even shared anything yet.
Yeah.
And so I think that the encouragement is that as we really move toward the Lord and what he has for our story of our marriage, that he is able to do abundantly far beyond what we could ask or imagine.
Yeah.
And there is absolutely hope that you can make it through this. Yeah. And there are communities, just like Jonathan, mm-hmm. you have access to so much support, so many resources
yeah.
that people can reach out for.
Yeah. You're not alone, right? Like there is community out there yeah. for you. And then secondly, I would say, he is worth it.
Yeah.
He is enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess lastly, I would say he is extending an invitation to you for freedom as well, to both of you.
Yeah.
And so I'm asking that you would grasp hold of it, because he wants to not just extend it, but he wants to walk in it with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so good. One of the things that I especially love about your story and what you've said is that, you know, that the truth would set both of you free.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's a powerful message. And we know that the truth is not information. It's a person.
Yes. Yeah.
Jesus is the truth.
Yes.
And so, and he was working on both of you, even when you didn't think he was working on both of you.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing about how the Lord works, is he does things behind the scenes that we can't see. And then when we come fully into the light, we realize, oh, I see that he was working, and that's a beautiful thing. So
he's been
thank you guys so much for thank you guys so much for sharing your story. Where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you guys and also get your book?
Yeah, so our book is on Amazon. We have the paperback ebook, and we actually recorded the audio version as well. Mm-hmm. And we have started a nonprofit organization called Do With Not For Ministries. Mm-hmm. And so that website is dwn4.org that you can find out about more of what we're doing to help other couples.
That's great. Well, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. We really appreciate you.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to post all that in the show notes, and we want to help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. And so please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Sharon.
I had a 40-year porn addiction.
Porn was an unwelcome guest for 32 years of our marriage.
I found hope and freedom when I attended a Gateway to Freedom weekend.
And I found hope and the courage to begin my healing journey while attending Wives Care.
Don't be like us and allow porn to wreak havoc in your lives.
Reach out to Be Broken today.
To learn more about Gateway to Freedom, 3-day intensive for men, and Wives Care online groups, visit BeBroken.org or call 210-822-8201. That's BeBroken.org or 210-822-8201.